I was excited about going traveling.
Stephanie Lorenzo had just finished a communications degree.
My friend Sarah, I was 21 at the time, said, hey, do you want to come and cycle across Cambodia, but you have to fundraise.
The bike ride was raising money for a disability charity.
At that time, charity wasn't super appealing to young people.
But Steph had never been to Cambodia and...
You'd cycle, you love to travel, you'd ask people for money, like, you know, it's for a good cause, why not?
So she went. She loved it.
I fell in love with Cambodia. When I was walking the streets of Phnom Penh, walked into a bookshop and found the book.
The Road of Lost Innocence by international human rights activist Somali Mam.
I couldn't put it down. Read it from cover to cover that night, pretty much.
Somali's memoir started Steph on a path that would help change young Australians' view on charity. But along the way, a crisis threatens everything she's working towards.
Cue real thing theme.
Somali, I want to start with you. You have quite a story to tell. How old were you when you were sold into the sex trade?
I don't know my age exactly. I don't know. I have maybe 12, 13. I don't know. I have no idea, you know, about my age.
Somali Mam's book, The Road of Lost Innocence, was harrowing. It told her story of being sold into sexual slavery.
What I loved about the book was her total honesty and her just... It was so personal. It was like she was talking to you.
The book also details Somali's work after escaping that horrific life. Steph had never even heard of human trafficking.
She sort of rose up and just put that to the side and wanted to support young women who were going through the same thing as her.
I am suffering by myself. I don't want another girl to suffer. But I don't know how to end sex trafficking. So I need all of you to help me.
She started by literally meeting a girl on the street and taking her into a home. And then that's how her organisation, AFICEP Cambodia, began. I think that's what I loved. There was a solution.
Steph and her friend had raised a decent amount cycling Cambodia. It got her thinking.
If my friend Sarah and I have enjoyed this so much, like surely I can get a couple of my friends to do it as well. And I'd love to do it for this woman in Cambodia.
A year later, she'd roped in 20 people for another bike trip.
I didn't feel compelled to, like, want to save the world, but you just, like, you can do something.
They raised nearly $100,000, and all of it was for Somali Mam's organisation.
I remember guessing her email, because I didn't know her, so it was like smarm@somali.org, smarly@somali.org, like trying all these things and just emailing going, hey, we're a bunch of Aussies. We've actually already raised, I think at that time we'd raised like $50,000, because it was halfway through, for your organisation. You know, if we could we meet you? Could we sort of see where your work, blah, blah, blah.
Eventually she won the email lottery and got through, and the group had lunch at Somali's home in Cambodia.
Anyone that has met Somali will tell you she's such an amazing, graceful, humble woman, beautiful, and, you know, she's got this international presence and she's met, like, Michelle Obama and she was in the Forbes Most Powerful Women. I was actually a bit in awe by her, I've got to be honest, and I think most people who have met her say the same thing. She's got this energy that's not full on. You meet this woman and you want to help her.
Afterwards, they visited the centres where their funds would be used.
Rehabilitation, reintegration, education.
Steph says it only takes 5 minutes for police to rescue a girl, but rescuing their life requires a long-term commitment. That's what they were doing at Somali centres.
And I think there was when I really saw, I guess, her authenticity and her genuineness, seeing these girls just having fun and having smiles on their faces. It was just this energy. I mean, that day has definitely been etched in my memory for a long time, and it's probably what's driven me the most.
The bike ride was a one-off thing, but when Steph came home, she was fired up, maybe too fired up.
I went into this shell of complete reverse culture shock, because coming back to Australia, and even my friends will testify to this, I was like a psycho lady. I was like, We need to do something about this. This is like injustice on a massive scale. And my friends were like, what are you talking about?
She was driving everyone nuts.
After probably a month of complaining about it and getting really frustrated at my friends for first world problems, I just sort of went, I can't be this jaded, upset person. This is probably why people don't like charity, because people are too full on about it.
Up to this point, Steph's life was headed somewhere different.
I really thought that I was going to climb the ranks and be like the CEO of an advertising company by the time I turned 30. Like, I wanted to be in that space. I said to my brother-in-law and my sister, I am going to go back to Cambodia and just volunteer. And he looked at me and he goes, what? I was like, well, I loved it. I spent International Women's Day with these girls and they were amazing and I was just so inspired. I'm going to go back there and help them.
Her brother-in-law dished out a reality check.
Steph, you've just from Australia got people to raise $80,000 for this organisation over there. Do you really think you spending like 3 months over there, helping these girls, teaching them English, is more valuable than the $80,000. He goes, you're so selfish. And I was like, how am I, what? And then I thought about what he said and I was like, yeah, I probably would have been really disheartened if I spent like 3 months in Cambodia trying to help these people. I probably would have gotten over it. I would have gotten impatient. I would have gone, there's so many flaws in this. I'm not doing it. And he really showed me that your skill set is here. Your skill set is empowering, engaging people here who are like you, who have the opportunity to do something, to then support them.
So in 2009, Steph starts a not-for-profit, Project Futures. The mission?
Raise awareness, engage a generation, end sex trafficking.
Back then, there were way less charities run by young people. She roped in a small group of mates as a management team.
In my network, none of us, we were good people, but we didn't really do much. We didn't donate to anything. You know, we were uni kids or just coming out of uni. So charity seemed like a concept for people with deep pockets and money. It seemed like it was just constantly feeling really bad about all these sad things that are happening in the world.
Steph's challenge was to change that perception.
I guess it was like, what's the problem? The problem is charity isn't a cool thing to do for young people, right? Yet we need to do something. So how are we going to solve that? Well, what do young people like to do?
They knew the adventure bike rides were a winner. Travel, experience, challenge. But they needed something simpler. What else do young people like? Mike, any clues?
I don't know. Fishing?
They love to party. Young people will go out on a Friday and Saturday night regardless. They'll put money on their credit card if they don't have the money.
Steph and her team started putting on events.
We'll give you an amazing experience like you would have anywhere else. It's going to be on par with what you'd pay in a nightclub. You get a free drink, bands, DJs, all your friends are doing it. But by coming to our experience, you're doing something for a great cause. It was like a tick, 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 tick.
Corporate charity events were often expensive black tie type deals. Parties by Project Futures were cheap.
The barrier of entry had to be low because we wanted to get young people involved. They could afford $40. So our profit margin wasn't amazing, but it doesn't matter because it was something.
And shoving human trafficking down people's throats was not the idea.
Our tone and our brand and our voice has always been empowering, not guilting. We don't want to perpetuate the sad stories. We want to be able to tell them with dignity when we need to. Let's get them to understand the issue but not dwell on the sadness of it. Sometimes if your parents say you are so lucky, it's different to when your friend goes, come on, we're so lucky, like we can do this.
Over the next few years, Project Futures grew.
Every event was bigger than the last and we'd raise more than the last.
Through their relationship with Somali, they were changing women's lives in Cambodia.
And what we could do was always so much bigger than what we thought we could do. And that inspired you even more to keep going.
Young Australians were changing as well. As it grew, lots of those uni grads who'd come to the parties now had high-paying jobs.
You can have your job. You can earn a great wage as an investment banker or an analyst at Macquarie Bank at 23, but you can also be purposeful in your life. They didn't have to give up their day job to do it.
As Somali Mum's international profile expanded, Project Futures helped bring her to Australia.
I was in Brussels until 1990.
Right. So how many years was that?
No idea about the years. You know how I get known that I was in the cage all the time. We never see the sun. We have no idea about hour, about the day, Monday, Saturday. We don't know it.
Stephanie Lorenzo, you are the founder and CEO of Project Futures. Your whole reason for being with Project Futures has been inspired by Somali Mum's story, hasn't it?
Well, correct. I mean, we started...
A lot of people came to Project Futures because they'd heard of Somali first. Project Futures wasn't massive. Somali had a really big name and we were an Australian-based organisation who had a direct relationship and was supporting her.
Steph's work was getting noticed. She was named in the Financial Review's 100 Women of Influence, did a TED Talk, and was nominated for Young Australian of the Year.
And you can't help if that sort of translates to you being a real part of the brand. You just can't help it. It's scary to do wrong in the non-profit world. Your reputation is more at stake in the not-for-profit world than the business world.
Project Futures was also at a junction.
So I just emailed her and said, happy to come in and have a chat and just see if I can help in any way the business side of things.
Tracy Charles was a GM at one of the big banks. She became Steph's mentor.
I never sort of really saw Project Futures as a not-for-profit. It was just, for me, a small business run by this CEO. I thought, okay, well, maybe she's at that crossroads of where do I go next?
Tracy came like godsend at the exact right time.
There's something when you see someone who's just got that inner passion.
Passion that's earned her a nickname.
The little energizer bunny. So she goes on and on and on and on and on. And my job was to help sort of center her and then push her in a direction that she wanted to go.
Good nonprofits need to be built like businesses. Tracy helped us really cement that and strategize for that.
And Steph was about to need all the help she could get.
May 2014, a big article came out about Somali Mum that was pretty much front page of an American publication called Newsweek, sex trafficking and a web of lies or something.
Somali Mum was accused of fabricating parts of her story in her original memoir. She was also accused of coaching other girls in exaggerating their stories.
And it was huge internationally because you've got to understand that anyone in the anti-human trafficking world knew Somali.
Right. And beyond, right? Oprah.
Yeah. Tyra Banks show she was on. Celebrities supported her in America. She was a big deal and it made worldwide news.
Everyone had questions, but Steph's weren't about Somali. They were about the girls in Cambodia.
They had three centres. They had between 150 to 200 girls at the time in those three centres, and they were losing support fast because people see a news article and they'll drop you.
How much did you feel was on the line when this story came out?
A lot. It was scary because your reputation gets caught up in it as well because you're supporting someone whose reputation has just been shot by the media.
Steph believes Somali was telling the truth and her response was shaped by a gut feeling.
It's a really weird one. I think that's, you know, when I'm sort of working in banking in particular, I always use my gut. You know, Steph's a confident person. That's where I think your gut instinct tends to play a role. And I said to her, providing you do an element of factual checking, at the end of the day, trust your gut. 9 times out of 10, that will stand you in good stead.
You can doubt yourself and you can question yourself, but at the end of the day, if your gut is telling you that you want to do what you feel is right, which is support this woman, why would I go against that? People ask me all the time, did you ask Somali if she lied, point blank? I actually haven't ever asked her that.
Her friend was in crisis.
I don't know why I didn't. I mean, if I look back, maybe there was a part of me that felt like it was not necessary. Maybe there was a part of me that was scared to hear the answer. But at the end of the day, with the relationship that I've built with Somali, it sounds bad, but I don't care what the answer would have been.
Another driver of Steph's disinterest was the work of the previous 6 years. It was time for Project Futures itself to make a call.
There was a big discussion when this came out with me and the board. And of course, as you would expect, some board members found it a huge reputational risk to themselves. I think the key argument was the fact that we had been to Cambodia, gosh, at least twice a year, looked at their finances. We had seen firsthand the work of the safe house, the stories and the impact with some of those girls. And why wouldn't you trust that?
So you might not have been an expert, but your experience on the ground
was so
visceral.
Correct. But again, we did do reporting. That's how we were able to get grants. That's how we were able to get tax deductibility status. We had done everything that a good charity does around transparency of their partners.
As part of the discussion, she put an ultimatum to the board.
I was willing to resign if we did not support Somali Mum ongoing.
It sounds like their trust in you and your feeling.
Yes.
Was really strong in their decision making, is that?
Yeah, I think it would have been, but it had to have been because I was the CEO of the organisation.
I don't believe
she lied.
But in the situation, yes. If she had lied.
But how would you ever know if someone had lied? Like, why bother making that conclusion? That's what I want to say.
I suppose when I think, the if I'm only thinking
person
about it, it's
that,
like...
But the only person that knows if they lied or didn't lie is Somali.
Sure.
So what
but
is
isn't
it
reasonable
me?
For people to have... Isn't it reasonable it's for reasonable. People to have questions
it's
where integrity... You've talked about how integrity is so important
it is so
in this line
and
of work.
It's absolutely reasonable. If we've made a decision, if someone is not happy, I would not be calling up day and night a donor that decided not to support us because they thought Somali lied.
The honesty that you said that you felt reading her book the first time, that sparked something huge in you.
Massive, yeah.
I guess I find it hard to wrap my head around that when that honesty is questioned... that it didn't shake your foundations in some way.
I guess it didn't because we'd already had such a long-standing relationship with them. I mean, if I had read that article a year after I had set up Project Futures, things may have been different.
The board made their call. They stuck by Somali and the work of her organisation in Cambodia. They were one of a very few who did.
She's a survivor. She's someone that has had no formal education. No organisation is perfect. I mean, let's be honest, no organisation is perfect. Everyone has to learn.
Stories continued to be written on Somali. Murray Clare called Newsweek into question. It got messy.
Because it was like a he said, she said.
A year on, Al Jazeera made a documentary.
I don't know. I guess people have to watch it and make their own conclusions. But I just think that didn't give the full picture as well.
Regardless, Steph and the board had made their decision and moved on with their work toward ending human trafficking.
Yes, Somali will always have a special place in my heart because she's the one that inspired me to begin this amazing and incredible journey. The reason why the organisation didn't crumble, and I certainly didn't crumble, is because it's grown so much past that. It's not about one woman. It's about many women.
The next couple of years were Project Future's most successful yet, and that growth wasn't stopping.
We were on 7 years of continual trajectory, playing with bigger dollars, forging these really great partnerships with corporates.
But at the end of those 2 years, things were changing for Steph. For the first time, she felt nervous.
It was quite stressful for someone that had really naively gotten into it.
You're a CEO now.
Well, yeah, I mean, anyone can call themselves anything these days.
But
yeah, we were dealing with a $1 million budget, like all of those kind of things. Project Futures, for a lot of the time, while it might have sounded like it was really cool and it was always fun and our photos and our videos showcased that, a lot of the time there was so much pressure.
She became indecisive.
Maybe I was scared of doing something wrong. Maybe the back of my head was this bit of the Somali stuff in there as well. But I started to get nervous for taking a risk, even though my intentions were good.
I think, you know, Steph became 30. You know, things start to change at 30. And what I saw, I think, in the last 6 months in particular, was that she was tired.
I wasn't as passionate as I was. You could sort of tell, I think, as well. And you start to go... If this is my feeling now, what is that going to do to the organisation?
And I kept saying to her, you know, you need to rethink what you want to do. How are you going to energise yourself again? Because that's part of who you are.
If you want to be the energiser bunny.
Yeah, you've got to be energised. And I think that's when she kind of went, you know what? I think I need to step away.
Steph faced a scary reality about this thing she'd started. Another friend reminded her of a truth in business.
Steph? Starting and scaling an organisation is very different and usually requires two different types of people.
And gave the clue she might be suffering some founder's syndrome.
I guess you get so caught up in it because your brand and your personality and who you are is so entwined in it. Everyone used to say, oh, Project Futures is your baby. It's your baby. And they say it with the best intentions. And you feel like it is your baby. Like, should I be leaving my baby? No.
But in truth...
It's not anyone's baby.
The way a charity works means it can't be.
It's governed by a board of directors that constantly changes. And yes, there's a founder, but the founder doesn't own it, they start it.
It was tough, but it was only a good sign that things were now moving beyond Steph's story too.
Beyond any one person. If you want to leave a legacy, if you want to leave something lasting, it can't be all about you. You have to leave. And it has to have structure and it has to not be about you. You have to know when to let go for the sake of the betterment of the organisation and the reason why you did it in the first place.
Since stepping down as CEO of Project Futures, Steph's taken 6 months off. As luck had it, during the time off, she ended up on one more adventure bike ride.
Freedom, I guess. You know, you're cycling through these amazing mountains of the Pyrenees, through these, it's called the Mazeta, this really long, arid bushland where you can't see for miles.
While Steph hasn't made her mind up about the future, she has been thinking about social business, a sector that mixes everything she is with everything she's done.
Yeah, I guess bringing together the corporate knowledge that I have, but then also that not-for-profit heart.
Steph is that epitome of the balance between entrepreneurial spirit, but doing social good.
This episode marks a new season for us here at The Real Thing.
Yeah, we're stoked to be back. There's so many more highways for us to go down and characters to meet.
Absolutely. This season coincides perfectly with summer. So every second Tuesday from now, we'll be in your feed with a new story. And as always, we'd love you to hit subscribe and come along for the ride.
We've got a few surprises coming your way too, and we can't wait to share them.
Yeah.
I'm Timothy Nicastri.
I'm Mike Williams.
And that's...
Episode 26 of The Real Thing.
Yeah,
that was good.